This is the Parenting for Faith podcast from BRF Ministries. Parenting for Faith exists to help you help the children and teens in your life to meet and to know God. We do this through online events, courses, and resources, and you can find out more at parentingforfaith.org.
Hello and welcome to episode 2. It's great to have you. My name's Lucy Rycroft and I'm your host. And this season we are looking at curveballs, those things that threaten to derail family life. And we're going to be hearing from some really interesting people. Today's guest is absolutely awesome. And I do have to give you a warning that this episode is a little bit longer than our usual episodes. We recorded a super long interview and honestly, we couldn't bring ourselves to edit it down because he shared so much helpful stuff on a topic which is maybe under-resourced and we wanted to keep it all in. So I'm sorry if you like the usual length and you may have to listen to this one in two sittings, but I hope you'll agree that what he had to share was really worth getting the most of and not being edited down. So that's just a little warning for you. As always, I wanted to give a trigger warning that we're going to be talking about drug addiction today. We're going to be talking about briefly about abuse and briefly about infidelity as well. So if any of that is a trigger for you, then there's a little warning for you as we start this episode. Now, some of you know, I used to be a secondary school teacher in my former life. And it kind of made me think naively that when I became a parent, my ideal stage would be teenagers. Like, you know, it didn't matter really if I didn't find my stride as a parent of a baby or a toddler or a young child, because as soon as my kids hit the age of 11 or 12, that was me. That was my time. I was going in, great guns, and I was going to be the world's best parent of teens, because obviously I understood teenagers because I'd been teaching them for a number of years. How wrong I was. If any of you out there have teenagers, then you'll know, as I now do, that it hits you like a ton of bricks. It is entirely different from teaching that age group. And it's a really fun time of parenting. Don't get me wrong. Don't fear it if you're not there yet. It is fun. But it's really challenging too. And I'm honestly up for any resource that will help me in this period. And one thing that we have done recently as a Parenting for Faith team, I say recently, but it's really been years in the making, is we have just released our Parenting Teens for a Life of Faith course, and it is excellent. Guys, I cannot recommend this to you any more highly. There are 6 video sessions. It's Rachel Turner at her absolute finest, teaching so faithfully from the Bible, and yet with such compassion and so many practical ideas, and there's stories on there. There's lots of input from parents, carers, youth leaders. It's just such a valuable course. And I would really urge you, if you have got teens or even if you've got tweens, take this course. It's free. You can watch it for free off our website. You can watch it on your own with your partner or with a church group. But do have a little look. I'll pop the link in the show notes because we think you're going to find it so, so helpful and really encouraging too, especially if your kids are maybe not showing that much interest in church at the moment. This course is for you too. It's not just for those whose kids are super engaged with church. So let that be an encouragement to go and download the videos, watch them. Let us know what you think as well. We'd love to know that. And if you're thinking of running it with your church, then you might be interested to know that we're going to host a Zoom version of the course in June and July. It starts on the 4th of June. It runs across 6 Tuesday evenings from 8 till 9 p.m. And we can do all that kind of leading, hosting, streaming work for you. All you need to do is just gather people, invite them, and we'll give you your own breakout room for discussion. So all the links are in the show notes. Do go check out the Teens course. Today, I'm so excited though that we're going to be talking about a topic which does affect some teenagers. And if it doesn't affect you, it is still a good listen. We all say this, don't we? Because it will help you understand those around you who may be in this situation. There's not much, I don't think, in the Christian world that kind of really speaks into and encourages parents who are in this situation. And yeah, I just think that the more we educate ourselves about this, the better. So today we're going to be talking about drug addiction.
For our episode today on addiction, I'm delighted to welcome Russ DeVos. Russ and his wife Heather walked through 5 grueling years of delinquency and drug addiction with their youngest son. The process drained them of resources and solutions and nearly cost them their marriage. But in the process, they discovered life-changing mindsets and skills that helped them to restore their marriage and equip them to become invaluable allies in their son's recovery process. Today, they have a healthy marriage, a thriving relationship with their son who is working on his sobriety, and they have equipped hundreds of parents of struggling teens across America with the same skills and strategies that were so life-changing for them. Russ, it is an absolute honor to welcome you to the Parenting for Faith podcast today. Thank you so much for coming on.
And it's an honor to be here. I'm so excited to share and to just have this conversation. So ready to go.
Excellent. I'm excited to have you here because I just think that this is kind of an area that potentially kind of comes with so much shame and so much isolation. And if we can do something to help parents feel like they're not so alone in this, then that's only going to be a good thing, right? So I just wondered to start off with, Russ, would you mind sharing some of your story of family life and what it's been like for you guys?
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to keep this short because it goes back really to 2004, 2007. My wife and I planted a church and it exploded. And at the height of all of our success, I had an affair and it blew our ministry apart. It almost blew our marriage apart. And so we moved our whole family from Oregon, which is south of Seattle. It's the state below. And up to Seattle, Washington to restore everything. Our life was in shambles and our kids were much younger then, but though we our marriage survived, I was extraordinarily angry. I'd never wanted to be in ministry. And so I kind of blamed God. I blamed a lot of people and I was living in a very, very dark place for many years, for about 8 years. And, didn't open my Bible for 2 years after leaving ministry. I was so angry, but it affected my kids. And 2015 was kind of a come to Jesus for me, but it got worse before it got better. We ended up being separated maritally four different times and just a lot of turmoil and struggling to rebuild our marriage, struggling to rebuild myself as a person, a restoration process that we'd been promised never happened. So we kind of were just trying to bit and piece our lives back together. Underneath of it all, God was extraordinarily kind and extraordinarily gracious, but it was quite a process. In the midst of it, in about 2017, we'd been struggling with our youngest son for years. I mean, we saw stuff in him when he was a two-year-old that was concerning, and it just got more and more extreme as he got older. And we've been thinking we have no more answers. We had exhausted all charts and graphs and counseling and working with the school district and police. I mean the whole nine yards. And I'm a control guy, I'm a chart guy, I'm a systems guy. I can figure this out. You know, I'm smart, I'm a strong personality. I can just kind of force him into compliance. And the more I tried, it was like quicksand. I just sunk deeper. We all sunk deeper. And we got to the point, where I started telling my wife, we need help outside of us. And the thought of sending him to a program was absolutely unacceptable to my wife. For her, it was total rejection of our son and a complete acknowledgement that we had failed. There was a multiple assets to, or aspects to that that she just could not get her mind around and her heart around. But I began researching different programs and came in contact with Teen Challenge, which has about 100 adult programs, but about 19 for youth, girls and boys around the country, and began to talk to my wife about that. Bottom line, things got to the point where she finally realized we just don't have what it takes. We don't have the resources to do this. And so we ended up sending him to a year program. It took our whole life savings. I mean, it was very expensive. And my whole thought, and this is going to be part of our conversation, was we're going to spend a bunch of money. We're going to send our kid away. You're going to fix him. And then you're going to send him back. And then life will just carry on as it should have it to begin with. And everything will be better. And I was in for a very rude awakening. I didn't realize how much I had played into the process, the family dynamics of it all. It wasn't just about our son. And so we, by God's grace, our marriage was hanging on by a thread at this point. We did not know how to co-parent our son. I was strong. My wife was more, trying to offset my strength with what we would call enabling. And we just couldn't get on the same page. So we had sent our son to this program, and in the process, about a month and a half later, there was a experimental 20-week course that was offered to just four couples. There were about 35 boys at the program, 35 couples, and all, it was offered to four of us. It was a guinea pig type of a program. It was originated out of a church in Dallas, Texas, and it was on Zoom. It was the first ever of its kind. This was before COVID, before Zoom was a big thing. And we were asked to be part of it. And initially I was like, no way, I don't want to expose my whole life to a bunch of strangers. And, but my wife was adamant that we do it. And so I agreed. And the long story short, it has been the most miraculous discipleship process that we've ever had. Even as a pastor, I've never seen anything like it. And so we went through 20 weeks with a plastic surgeon and his wife, who were the co-founders of this group, whose own son was a prodigal. They'd walked through all of the same things. And as our mentors, they helped us to see that this was not just about fixing our son, but that we played a huge part in it. And in the process, it really brought our marriage together. It completely changed my relationship with Jesus. And so after that first season, we were asked to be co-leaders, and so we served under this couple. And then the next third season, we were asked to be leaders, and so we took our own group. And more parents from these Teen Challenge programs began to take part. And before long, you know, we were on the screen on Tuesday night with about 35 couples. And so it's just grown and grown. And now we're in season, getting ready to finish season 11 and enter season 12. So in the process, it's been hundreds of parents we've worked with, but we're just watching miracles, transformation of families. It is extraordinary. And so that's kind of the summary of how I get to be sitting here with you.
That's incredible. Wow. Praise God for such a story of redemption. And I kind of feel like we should invite you back to come and talk about marriage, because I feel there's a whole other story in there. But
that would be, I would do it. It's a huge part of this.
It really is. And I was chatting to someone earlier today, actually, about how I think often these things are worse in Christian circles. When you're struggling in Christian circles, it's harder, you know, because everything is that bit more taboo. You know, if you're struggling in your marriage, it's more taboo in church circles. If you're struggling with your children, it's more taboo in church circles. And one of the wonderful things about having you on today is to be able to empathize with parents listening who are feeling like they can't be honest with their Christian communities about what's going on, because what you're saying is, you know, God has endless grace to offer you. And actually, it's a message for us all to be non-judgmental, to be supportive, to be those kind of disciples as we walk alongside each other and as we pursue Jesus.
100%. This, parents are so afraid of being judged because of the behavior of their children that it is, I know there are thousands, if not tens of thousands of couples who are battling with this, but it's very secretive. It's very kept in behind closed doors and closed walls, and people are suffering in silence. And it's very similar to, it's an abusive situation in many cases. A lot of our prodigal kids are very abusive. And in response, a lot of parents are also abusive. I mean, I ended up in jail twice because of altercations out of anger, trying to figure out how to deal with this situation. And that's all part of the story too, because God used that to say, Russ, you cannot parent this way. You have to get control of your anger. Yeah. And I justified it. I thought, you know, it's righteous anger. No, it wasn't. It was out of control anger. And the Lord is, that's been a major part of the journey too, is learning how to control anger, because anger, I found, was one of the major enabling ingredients that whenever I blew up, whenever I exploded, it just, in a sense, justified my son's behavior. Mm-hmm. And my behavior became the main issue. So the Lord had to allow me to go through some pretty hard times sitting in a jail cell for four different nights that finally got my attention about 2:30 in the morning one night, my second time in jail. The Lord said, Russ, I want to use you, but I'm not going to use you if you're going to be angry. I just felt the Lord impress that so strongly on me. And so I dealt with that at about 2:30 in the morning, pacing in a jail cell in South Seattle.
Well, praise God. Praise God for that intervention. He is so gracious. And, you know, the world doesn't really have anything to offer us. I feel like when we've failed in the world's eyes, we get these labels, don't we? Like abuser or, you know, jailbird or whatever. Yeah. But God forgives a repentant heart. And isn't that just so wonderful that he gives new life, you know, not only to your son, but to you as well, and to your marriage. It's so incredible. And Russ, I can imagine this was not the journey at all that you expected when you became a dad. We're talking about curveballs on this season, you know, those things that kind of come into family life and threaten to derail us. And obviously this whole story very nearly derailed your family. Can you tell us, you've sort of touched on it already, but can you go a bit deeper for us about how these experiences have shaped and changed you as parents? So you just talk about yourself if you want. I'm not asking you to expose your wife necessarily, but how's this journey been for you guys?
Yes. I think to dive right to the core of it, and especially being a pastor, you know, when you teach the word, you have words that you use that you think you know, but they're more in your head than in your heart. So for instance, trusting God. I believe that learning to trust God is the core goal of our whole journey. And as people in the faith community, we can so easily spout off, I trust God, I have faith in God. We can talk about that so casually and so simply. But what I came to understand in this process is that though I could preach about it, I could write articles about it, I could disciple other people in this whole area of trusting God, I straight up did not trust God. I did not know how to trust God with this journey with our son through his prodigality, and then eventually into drug use. I knew how to control things. I knew how to exert my personality. I knew how to throw Bible verses around, but I didn't really trust God. And one of the analogies that I give is, even as a pastor, I had kind of my nose up against the window looking into all the good things that God had, but I wasn't in the candy store, so to speak. I was standing outside. I knew of Jesus, and I preached about him and I taught about him, but I didn't really know him. I didn't really trust him. And some of the main characteristics of a lack of trust in God, anger is one of them.
Yeah.
A desire to control things is another one. A lot of anxiety, of course, is another characteristic. Mm. And I had all of those things, and those just exacerbate any problems in this whole process. It just adds to it dramatically. So what I tell families in the program that I've created called Lifeline, my goal is that so many parents are well-meaning. They really do love their children, and they want to help their children through this, you know, whether it's delinquency, defiance, or drug abuse. But most parents are actually a liability to their children. Well-meaning, but they're a liability. They're not an asset. They're not a help. They actually hinder. They actually push sobriety and push health and healing away from their child by their controlling nature, by their desire to get very intimately involved in that journey to sobriety. And most of it is out of fear. It's very fear-driven, so fear-driven. And a lot of it is image also. That's where the shame comes in. We don't want anybody to know the mess that our family is. But the core of it is that we don't really trust God. And when you don't trust God, you've got to become God. You've got to do what God only can do.
Yeah.
But we don't do it well. We're not equipped.
That's so good. You're so spot on there. I mean, you know, we don't want to relinquish that control, and we become our own God, and we relate to our own authority rather than a higher one.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And Russ, were there moments in this kind of journey where you doubted God's character, where you doubted his goodness?
I'm not so sure that I doubted his goodness or I doubted his character, but I will tell you the confusion of, Lord, what in the world are you doing? You know, we've had all this heartache and all this pain in the past from ministry, and now we've got this, and it's just, you know, you, again, panning back and kind of painting a bigger picture. We have this picture of what our life is supposed to look like, what our career is supposed to look like, what our retirement is supposed to look like, how our kids are supposed to turn out, how our marriage. We have these pictures in our minds, and they come with intense amounts of expectations.
Yeah.
And those expectations, we say, are just set up for disappointment and frustration. And we hold on to them so tightly. So for me, it wasn't so much a doubting of God's character or even his goodness. It was confusion. What in the world are you doing?
Sure.
You know, what did we do to deserve this? What, and it really forced me to look at all the expectations that I had and release them. I had to let go of these things, these pictures in my head of, this is what God needs to do for me. This is the kind of life that he should create for me. And I had to, just one at a time. When our son was a savant violin player in eighth grade, he was being offered by one of the greatest violin teachers on the planet to teach him personally. Wow. The guy happens to live just a couple miles from us. He's one of the premier violin teachers in the world, offering to teach our son. And he chose drugs instead of that, you know? Mm. And so we had this dream for our son with his violin. We had a dream for him because he was in all the accelerated learning classes in school. I mean, he's a brilliant kid.
Yeah.
And so you just, one by one, you're starting to get rid of and drop and just let go of, you know, you're holding these visions and dreams so tightly. And you just, one at a time, you just say, okay, Lord, I trust you with his violin playing. I trust you with his future. I trust you with his college, because that doesn't look like it's going to happen at this point. Mm-hmm. I trust you with the picture I had for our family to be this wonderful, almost Brady Bunch, serving Jesus together. You know, all of us, you just begin to release things and say, okay, Lord, I trust you. I trust you. I trust you. Mm-hmm. And the extenuating circumstances of these journeys, you either release or you go out of your mind almost.
Yeah. That's so good, Russ. Thank you for sharing that. I feel like we often kind of put these expectations onto what we deserve or what God should be blessing us with. And again, that is sometimes exacerbated by the church's teaching, which, mm-hmm. if it's not prosperity gospel as such, is kind of hinting at it by suggesting that this is what the perfect life looks like, and this is therefore what we should be praying for and asking God to do in our lives. Now, there's nothing wrong, obviously, in praying for things to get better, for situations to get better, for people to be healed, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But, you know, you say you're sort of thinking, well, God, what are you doing? Well, I suppose the response to that is, well, this is life, this is sin, this is the fall, this is what's happening here. And I'm with you in it. But it's not as you're expecting it to be. One of our key tools that we talk about here at Parenting for Faith is surfing the waves of our children's faith journey. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've just done a whole season on it, you know, surfing the waves of our children's interest in different things, music or science or sport or whatever, mm-hmm. and how we can kind of journey with them as they seek God through the interests and hobbies that God's given them. But, of course, in a much deeper sense as well, surfing the waves includes riding with our children in these times that are really tough as well.
Yep.
What advice, based on what you've experienced, what you are experiencing, what advice would you give to other Christian parents who find themselves, mm-hmm. unexpectedly surfing the waves of their child's addiction?
Yeah. Oh, that's a big question. A couple of things that first occur to me would be, one of the major ways that we served was his own walk with Jesus. As a dad, as a former pastor, I really tried to control that. And I was well-meaning, but in this process, what we have basically come to is that God is doing his own unique work in Simon's life. Our son's name is Simon. And that we will stand back and we will support him. We will pray for him, but he's got to meet Jesus on his own. He has got to have that face-to-face with Jesus. It can't be a secondhand faith through my wife and I. Yeah. And so in one of the things we train parents in is in what we call the four phases or the four stages of parenting. So for instance, let me just run it through it real quickly and it'll help answer this question. Ages roughly 0 to 2 or 3, we call it the caretaking age, where you're doing almost everything for your child. You're caretaking them. You're changing their diapers, you're feeding them, you're putting them to bed, getting them up. You're doing about everything. Once they hit 3, right in that age group, through about 11 or 12, we call it the cop. You go from a caretaker to a cop. And there's a lot of teaching them what their boundaries are. So you're sharing with a lot of no's. You're telling them no, that boundary is here, not over here. And you're teaching them verbally. There's a lot of verbal teaching. So in the first two phases, the caretaker and cop, you are largely responsible for your children.
Mm. Yeah.
But when they hit the teen years, and the goal, by the way, for parents, a lot of parents have to be told this, is not to hold on to your children, it's to release your children. The Bible talks about children being as arrows to be shot out, not to be kept in the pouch.
Yeah.
And we're raising our children to shoot them out, to send them out into the world, to be light and salt, to be productive, healthy members of society, not to keep them in the nest so we can protect them. So when they hit that teen years, we move from cop to coach. Now, the thing about a coach is that a coach is still very involved in the life of the player, thinking of it from a team standpoint. Yeah. But there's a point where the coach sends that player onto the field, thinking of a soccer or a football field. The coach doesn't go out there and get in the huddle with them. The coach is on the sideline working from that place, and there's a greater amount of distance. That's where I failed miserably. I took the cop role and took it right up into the teen years, where I'm still controlling, heavily responsible for them and making a lot of their decisions. Whereas when we get to the coach role, we've got to let them fail. So instead of a lot of words, which were the main teaching tool in the cop role, when we get to the coach role, it's modeling largely. We have, if we have done our job in teaching our children biblical principles for successful living, now when they hit their teen years, we've got to let them try these things out. We've got to let them learn by experience. So we have to back off. We're still there as the coach, but we're not so much the cop. We've got to let them fail.
Yeah.
And that is a huge, what I see with so many parents is they pull that cop role right up into the teen years. It creates immense amounts of rebellion. And here's another thing that I've realized, because when you hit about 18 and they go off to college potentially, or they go into the work world, you move from coach to counselor. So you're even taking a further step back.
Sure.
And if we don't allow the kids that coaching season where they are making mistakes, but within a protected environment of the family with parents who are supportive but not controlling, often a child goes off to college and then you hear them going crazy in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that should happen in the family situation, where you have boundaries, you have consequences set up in the family. So there's the sowing and the reaping principle going on in the family, where mom and dad are letting the kids make decisions, but also giving consequences, doing it without anger. A coach, who is a good coach, isn't swearing and yelling and screaming at his players. There's an authority there, but it's not an overbearing authority if you're a good coach. Mm. But allowing children, you're giving them more and more ability to make their own decisions. So you move from responsible for them to responsible to them. Mm. And there's a modeling that goes on where they're watching your life like a hawk. Are you going to walk your talk? Are you living what you taught me all these years? Or are you a hypocrite?
Yeah.
One of the greatest turnoffs to a child is a parent who says one thing and does another. Mm. And that's where the Lord really had to challenge me is that I could talk real good. I was a pastor. I could speak, but am I going to live it in front of my kids?
Yeah.
Right in the home. And so parents transition then to really giving the kids more distance, but then walking out their faith in front of their child in a way that is so real and so evident that that child may fail, but he knows mom and dad are walking their talk. They have a spiritual authority in the home. I hope that answers the question.
It really does. Yeah, I love that. I think that's so relevant for every parent, isn't it? Whatever you're walking through with your child. I've got kids in the cop and coach seasons of parenting, and you're so right, aren't you? And actually, last week we had a guest on the podcast who was talking about it in terms of a tree, and a tree has roots, and it has the trunk, and it has the foliage, and the outward attitudes and actions of the foliage. And she had realized with her daughter that she was spending so much time, so much of her narrative, her conversation with her daughter was about the outward actions that she was exhibiting and the attitude she was exhibiting, but she wasn't investing in the root and the trunk. I think she described the trunk as being like her identity and her awareness of herself, and the roots as being the biblical foundations that she was putting in. And actually, she realized she had to go much deeper and actually input into this girl's life. And incredibly, she did that consistently for nearly 3 months. And her daughter gave her life to Jesus at the end of that 3 months, because our kids, especially our teens, will fail. They will get drunk. They will do whatever. But having that loving, consistent base that you're talking about, and having that coach mentality, and letting our children know we're always for them. Gosh, 100%. That's so powerful. And thank you for sharing that, because I know that's also, I know you're not saying that glibly. You're saying that as somebody who has walked alongside a child who it has not always made the right decisions. You're not saying that as a parent of children who've always done the right thing. So I know that comes with real depth behind it. Mm-hmm.
And one thing too is that parents, this is one of the big transitions when you move from responsible for to responsible to. In the responsible to phase, there's a phrase that I think that really helped me is in that phase, you let the consequences do the teaching.
Yep.
And so often parents are going to, they lecture, they talk a lot, they over-talk. One of the ways our kids draw us into conflict is that they get us involved in arguments. They push our buttons and then we're arguing with them.
Yeah.
And in that phase of responsible too, we teach parents, you've got to have clear boundaries and clear consequences. And then you, as a united couple, you stand strong together to enforce consequences, so that it's not so many words. It's the pain of the consequence that teaches that child. And that's the whole biblical principle of sowing and reaping. And it is the most powerful, or one of the most powerful teachers that there is. Mm-hmm. And it can be done without anger. It can be done very calmly. And that was the transition in the course. When we first took that 20-week course while our son was in Teen Challenge, we created a plan for our home. We hadn't had one before. We hadn't had clear boundaries in the home. We hadn't had clear consequences. My wife and I were not on the same page remotely on how to deal with things, mm-hmm. what was expected in the home. It takes work, but it clarifies everything. Everybody knows what they're responsible for. They know they're going to be held accountable for those responsibilities, and they know that there are going to be consequences if those responsibilities aren't fulfilled. And it creates safety in the home. A lot of people think, well, I don't want a lot of rules in my home because, I don't want this stifling environment. We're not talking about a lot of rules. We're talking about a clear plan. And when that happens, it brings peace back to a home. It actually creates an environment of safety. A lot of our kids, as well-meaning as we are, they don't feel safe in our homes because we're not consistent. We say one thing, we don't do it. We don't follow through. Every time that happens, trust is broken, and our kids trust us a little bit less. And when they trust us a little bit less, the respect for us diminishes just a little bit, because trust is built, or respect is built on trust. And so we're helping parents to get on the same page, first of all. But let me go back, not even get on the same page, first of all, to pursue Jesus with passion.
Yeah.
Because it takes heavenly strength and resolve to be able to walk this out. You cannot do it on your own. So the first goal whenever we work with parents is to point them to Jesus. You must begin to build a relationship with Jesus. It can't be casual. It can't be just on a Sunday only basis. I mean, it's a daily basis where we're going to heaven and asking God to give us supernatural strength and his wisdom and his love. I didn't even love my son when we sent him to the program. I held him in a lot of contempt.
Yeah.
And I was so glad to get rid of him, to be very frank with you. But in that process, the Lord showed me I had a hard heart towards my son. And God helped to take that rocky heart and turn it into a soft heart. And so that's the first thing. And then the second is getting mom and dad together in the case where there's both parents in the home. And I know there's a lot that aren't, so that's a little different, but we're responsible for our own hearts. And then putting a plan together that we both get behind. And when those things happen, we can't guarantee the outcome of what happens with our drug abusing or our delinquent child. That's not for us to determine.
Yeah.
Because we've taken our hands off of it and we realize we can't control that. Mm. What we can control is our own heart, our own journey, our own walk with God, the plan that we put together. But we provide a place where our kids can come back into the home to a place that has clear boundaries, consequences, and is safe maybe for the first time.
That's super wisdom. Thank you, Russ. And I love that you're using what has been an unexpected and a really difficult season of life to encourage others, to equip others, to coach others. And it kind of reminds me of that bit, I think it's James 5, that talks about kind of sharing in each other's sufferings and each other's joys. And, you know, if someone's sick, lay hands on them, and that kind of wonderfulness of community. We're kind of wrapping up our interview, but briefly, can you just kind of share on what difference having a community around you makes at a time like this? Like, did you find support? You obviously had amazing support from the program that you were on through Teen Challenge. Did you find a supportive church community? Did you have support of Christian friends? Or if not, you know, what would have made the difference?
Yeah. That's a tough question, because even the church doesn't really know how to deal with folks battling with children like this. Most parents come to us, their own church community isn't even aware a lot of times what's going on, because they hide it. So, I mean, we didn't want our friends to know what was going on. We wanted to portray that we, you know, were good parents and that we had everything together. And that's one of the things we have to help parents firstly get over is there's no guarantee you can be the perfect parent and still have a child who ends up prodigal. I mean, God is the perfect father, and Israel was a prodigal, his prodigal daughter, his prodigal bride. I mean, the whole of scripture is the prodigality of the child of the perfect father. So that's the story. We help parents, first of all, deal with some of that shame that this is the whole message and the whole story of the Bible.
Yeah.
And so even as perfect parents, there is no such thing, but the most perfect that you can possibly, you're still no guarantee how your child's going to turn out. So, but that creates a lot of shame and it causes people to isolate. Community is absolutely non-negotiable in this journey. You have to have community. The decisions you're going to make when it comes to tough love with your child, because so many parents in the name of unconditional love are actually hurting their children and continuing the addiction and pushing health further and further away. The tough decisions, for instance, let me give you a story. When our son came home from the program, he came home to a unified mom and dad. He came home to a clear, simple plan for what was acceptable and what wasn't and what the consequences would be. We made it non-negotiable that he have a job, and we thought he was leaving every day and going to Costco and working at Costco. Well, I got a text message that was actually a TikTok video one morning of him snorting cocaine off of his Costco name tag.
Gosh.
It was one of the most horrifying things I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
I'm watching my son snort cocaine on my phone. Wow. Well, I'm so thankful I got that in the morning, because It took me much of the day to prepare my heart for the confrontation that had to happen in the evening.
Yeah.
And so we worked through that. We brought it into our community. We have the community, the prodigal. It's called The Prodigal is the name of the program. We brought it to those people. We had people praying. My wife and I were on the same page. We got our plan out again and looked at it and just knew we had boundaries for this. We had consequences for this. And the consequence for drug use like that was he forfeited his place in our home. And so we had a drug test waiting for him when he came home. He wouldn't take it for almost 2 hours. And we sat on the couch and said, nobody's going to bed. Nobody's moving until the drug test is taken. Finally, he relented. And he tested positive for three different substances. And my wife, during that process, didn't say a word. She allowed me to lead. We just followed our plan. Simon knew exactly what the consequences were.
Yeah.
When he tested positive, we calmly said, buddy, you know what the consequence is for this. And he shook his head, yes. And I said, bud, you have 30 minutes to pack your bags.
Yeah.
And at 10:30 at night, in a downpouring rain, he walked out of our house. And it was one of the hardest things we've ever had to do, other than sending him to the program in the first place. But if we would not have done that, we would have perpetuated his drug abuse.
Yes.
It takes brutally hard decisions by parents. It takes tough love that is the biblical, we call it responsible biblical love, to deal with these issues. And the community, you asked about the community, it is non-negotiable. We will relent and allow the discomfort of those hard decisions to take over. And we end up being very emotion-led parents instead of principle-led parents. And emotion-led parents, they are a liability to their child, and they just push sobriety and health and healing further and further and further into the future. Tough love is what shortens that span towards sobriety, but it is brutally hard.
Yeah.
And both parents have to be united, and that community is invaluable.
Yeah. Because when you're feeling stricken that you've possibly done the wrong thing, or, you know, when you're feeling tempted to go back on the plan you made or the boundaries you set, you've got that community supporting you and holding you up and saying, you've done the right thing. You've done the right thing in love. That's so helpful. Thank you. Russ, just as we end this interview, I'd love you to tell us a little bit about Catalyst Coaching and how people can kind of find you online, and anything you'd like us to know.
Catalyst Coaching was born out of a desire to take the things that God was doing in my own life and the transformation that I was experiencing. And I was watching men all over the place. My profile as a man is I thrive in business, thrive as a pastor, thrived in leading organizations, but I was very, very, I wasn't winning any awards at home. I'll just say that. I couldn't translate the success at work into my home. And God had to allow me to go through some very difficult things. So the coaching has really been to pass on to many men that I see the same patterns in. They're successful outside the home, but they can't translate it into the home. And so they're not leading well. They're not good husbands, good fathers. A lot of times, maybe well-meaning, but they're not effective. And so initially I was coaching men, and I still coach men. But as our son's journey progressed, the Lord just kind of caused me to zig and zag a little bit towards working with both parents. And so I created a 16-week course, a program called Lifeline, which is built out of the course that we had taken, or the program that we went through. I've supplemented it with some other things, and I think have tweaked it to be very effective 16 weeks for parents to walk through, to go from chaos and confusion to calm and confident. That's really the journey. Chaos and confusion week one, walking out the back end with a greater, much greater level of confidence and calm. And so that's available for parents. I will do that in a group setting. The group, the community, is where healing happens.
Sure. It's available online, so potentially internationally.
for those, we would need a group of a minimum of three couples to walk through it together. The support that is given is so powerful when other couples are supporting one another. But they can find out about it and sign line up a call with me, 45-minute call with me, to get the details about it, for me to hear their story, what's going on in their family, and then to be able to give them direction. But the goal would be three minimum of couples that would walk through this together, and then I would be their facilitator, their trainer, teacher, and coach. And my website is catalystcoachinghq.com, catalystcoachinghq.com, and all of those links and abilities to connect with me are right there on the website. So
that's super. Yeah, thanks, Russ. And we'll put all that in the show notes as well. So if you're listening and you're interested to hear more about Russ's ministry and to get involved with Catalyst Coaching, then check out our show notes, as we'll put all the links in there. Russ, this has been a much longer conversation probably than I'm allowed. but it's just been so good. Thank you. I couldn't cut you off at any point, because it's just been gold what you shared. Thank you so, so much for you and for your ministry. And may God bless you in it.
Yes, you're welcome. And thank you so much for having me.
And the question we have for you and your kids this week is, if you could only consume one food or drink for the rest of your life, what would it be? That's it for this week. Join us next week when we will have guest Lisa Campbell from Wonderful Me sharing about how we deal with big emotions in our family life. See you then. Bye.